Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I've been waiting half a year to use this. We have a busy afternoon, but before we go back to Doug, I do want to recognize Karen, Joan, and Juanita. It's Professional Administrative Day for all the hard work they do to keep the council boat afloat. So thank you very much. We'll buy you a beer later. Okay, coming back to SBRM, following Doug's presentation, are there any questions? Ellen.
We spoke at lunch, but I did have a question on the document that we have. It's number 2 in the file. It's, do you know which one I'm talking about? Under 6.3, it says less than minimum plot coverage, pilot coverage, and there are 3 options. And he went over this very quickly, and I feel like, to me, these pertain to the accuracy, and I really would like to have the differences in these 3 options explained. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I did go over them pretty quickly. Let me just go back on it. Again, this is for if in a circumstance where there's not enough funding to cover even the minimum pilot coverage across all the fleets, how you would prioritize which fleets don't get coverage in order that other fleets do have at least a usable amount of coverage. There was an ad hoc prioritization process in that option where it would be consultation between the regional office and the council on setting that. And the other two, like the other prioritization, are formulaic approaches. The PDT looked at this and thought there are a couple of ways to look at this. One is if you want to try to have as many fleets as possible have some amount of coverage, what you would do is remove those fleets that needed the most days. So you would eliminate the fewest fleets. And that's where the remove fleets with the high minimum pilot coverage number comes in. However, the consequence of that is because minimum pilot coverage is 3 trips per quarter that the fishery is operated, that can result in essentially eliminating those fleets that have the longest trip length. And again, that's because it's by quarter, you could actually end up with a fishery that has long trips but operates in only one quarter, actually needing fewer days than a fleet with slightly shorter trips but operates in 3 or 4 quarters of the year. But in essence, what that would do is eliminate fleets with the longest trip length first. The other alternative we came up with was to try to sort of prioritize those fleets, and that's where removing fleets with a high minimum pilot coverage to days absent ratio, where you try to prioritize and you essentially keep those fleets that are the most active, that have the most number of days absent by VTRs from the previous year, while also factoring in the amount of minimum pilot coverage that would be necessary for the way. So those are the 2 options, formulaic options to try to adjust that. Is one would sort of essentially target those trips that are use the most, have the longest trip length, and the other one ends up targeting those that have the least active fleets, fleets that take the fewest days of the whole year.
Other questions for Doug? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug, one of the things we talked about last week when you gave us this presentation was the fact that the councils seem to be giving up their ability to, and their discretion to identify priorities within this process. Can you comment on that, please?
Yes, that's part of the sort of the consequence of the lawsuit that this has sort of been operating under, because the council, because the court sort of identified agency discretion as being a problem and being the deficiency, the legal deficiency. This takes a much more formulaic approach to the ultimate decisions, especially when there's some limiting on funding about where days go. And the previous process, which allowed a lot of consultation between the councils and the agency to determine the priorities for setting observer coverage, those limited observer coverage, this does take that discretion out, and so it makes it more formulaic. And then likewise, the funding triggers by removing the agency discretion there, at least in the regional agency discretion, it does significantly limit the options to adjust the, you know, to take days and move them for other management priorities. It's sort of a consequence of the legal decision that this is that prompted this.
Any other questions, David?
Yeah, Doug, thank you. In our binder, of course, we have your presentation, and we have a letter from David Gethel that highlights, as he always does, concern about accuracy of information we get from all the sampling that we do. I don't have the entire amendment before me now. I probably should have referenced it beforehand, but I didn't. Is it possible for you to summarize briefly how, in your presentation under Chapter 5 that you note, how did the service analyze accuracy? That's one of the parts of Chapter 5. And it's like David Gethel and like many council members, I also have great concern that accuracy is more important than precision. Precision is important, but accuracy is kind of important. So how has that been addressed?
I'm sure I will not actually do the analysis justice. I know that's been done by the Science Center, and they may be listening and cringing at my responses. It is addressed in that chapter, and particularly there's some analysis of how accuracy versus precision can be measured in this context where you ultimately don't know the true value of discards, and you have to be a deviation from that. In addition, we also reference much more recent work that's ongoing. I know the Groundfish PDT and some others have been looking on a regular basis trying to identify issues they can find on accuracy of the data. As of now, those results haven't come up with concrete recommendations for how to improve accuracy on the system. So it's an analysis sort of there appears to be some difference between observed versus unobserved trips, but whether or not those differences would result in more or less discards or just the same discards, they're just differences, that level hasn't been able to be identified yet. So although we're continuing work and this doesn't preclude any additional work that would come forward on accuracy, that's sort of not quite ready yet to be incorporated or to make a change in and how these would be assigned to address accuracy issues.
Okay, but that particular chapter, the analysis of accuracy in Chapter 5, it's safe to say that it has been updated, that analysis has all the recent work that has been done relative to this important issue. Is that a safe assumption on my part?
Yes. It has the analysis that was done, the sort of much more in-depth analysis that was done back in 2004. It makes reference and cites a lot of the more recent work and the results coming out of that. Yes, that's in there.
Follow-up to that, Tom?
As a member of the FMAT, I'd like to add to that a little bit. You know, unless you have 100% observer coverage, your observer coverage is always going to – your estimates of discards are always going to be based on inferences on the observed trips. And you don't always know whether behavior is the same and whether your sampling is done correctly. Hopefully it is, according to the design of your program. Doug referenced some work done by the Groundfish PDT a couple of years ago. That was supplemented by some work that Paul Rago did with respect to accuracy with the sector discard and observer coverage rates. There was additional work actually done primarily by Paul just last week at the Georges Bank Yellowtail meeting that looked into, you know, how accurate does your information have to be and how would it affect – I'm not describing this right. Let me just say there was additional work done on accuracy at the Georges Bank Yellowtail meeting with respect to both landings and discards. This is something that also is looked at in the periodic reports that are examined. They look to make sure that, for example, trip length is similar on observed and unobserved trips, locations fished are similar on observed and unobserved trips. There are some other elements that they look at to examine it to try and detect if there really are behavioral differences going on between the trips. So this is a bottom line is, as Doug pointed out, this is an ongoing process to examine the accuracy and to try and evaluate the accuracy. But it's very difficult because you're trying to infer what's going on an unobserved trip based on what you see on an observed trip.
Ellen.
I understand the difference between observed and the accuracy on observed and unobserved trips, but what about the accuracy of the mathematical formula that you're using to determine how many trips to actually and what boats to go on? That's a piece of the accuracy you might be precise in targeting something and then end up with a very inaccurate picture of what is actually happening.
Tom.
So I'll jump in a little bit on here because I just want to make it clear that I think sometimes when people start talking about this, they're talking about two related but different evolutions here. And I want to make sure I know which evolution you're talking about. And so the reason I mention that is because sometimes when people ask that question, they're referring to the SBRM itself and how the SBRM works and how discard estimates are used in assessments. And other times when people ask that question, they're referring to how the groundfish catch is monitored in season in the groundfish fishery. And so even though they use similar computational methods, they're not the same, and they don't use the same data. The method that is used in the SBRM was developed several years ago. It's based on a lot of stuff I don't understand, statistical sampling theory that's going on for years. And it was peer-reviewed by, I don't remember if it was our SSC or a subset of our SSC before it was adopted in this document. It's pretty standard and pretty well-accepted approach. It differs a little bit from what's used in the quota monitoring in the groundfish fishery, primarily because the data streams are different and they come in at different times. I would also point out, and this is perhaps a stretch, that the selection of observer trips that's done, I'm not sure that's actually spelled out in the SBRM, the PTNS system. So that's really not an element of the SBRM amendment.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was reluctant to even ask this because I get into statistics, and to me it's black magic and hocus pocus, and I don't understand how Nate Silva can predict the president to within 1% or less. But I'm curious as to why the reporting is done by gear type and political boundary. And this relates to what Dr. Pierce was asking about the accuracy versus precision question. And this is my own ignorance, so I'm just looking for an answer. I'm not trying to be belligerent. But stocks are determined by habitat type. And is this being done by species and political boundary? Is that where we are at here? Or was it impossible to do it by stock boundaries?
Well, I think there's two different levels. The fishing mode option, having to do with area and gear and things, it has to do with how we assign observers before a trip begins. And it's limited by that information that you can know before a trip goes out. So you can know what port they're leaving from. You can know what gear they intend to use. You can know the mesh size. So that's stuff they can use to assign observers. As far as reporting out the bycatch that we get at the end, that can be done many different ways once we get all bycatch is recorded on those trips. Those can be calculated in many different ways as far as the discard reports that come out. And I believe there was some interest in making sure they work, council staff work with center staff to then develop reports that are more usable to council members that may not necessarily stick to the fishing mode as far as reported out. It may go more FMP-based or some other way of recording discards. One of the problems with these systems, sort of in a trip that uses, a large mesh gill net and catches, fluke and some groundfish and some monkfish and some dogfish and has some discard, how do you assign that discard across those physically four FMPs that have been done? Is it by the value of the fish landed, by the sheer poundage landed, you can slice that a lot of different ways and that becomes sort of a difficulty. But that's something we can work out and work in reporting, I think. But as far as assigning observers before they start, that's where the political boundary and gears come in. Those are the information before the trip starts.
Okay, well, what I'm concerned about, and you can tell me if I'm just off the wall here and there is nothing to it, but I'm concerned that that people from a port that do these different things, go to different places, may be misassigned the bycatch that we're assuming for their fishery. And how do we try to do that in a fair manner? Is this, are we dealing with something that may be statistically accurate, but on the ground may not be fair to the users? Or is there a way of getting around that, or am I completely on the wrong, barking up the wrong tree here?
I'm not sure I'm necessarily following the fishermen from a particular port would be misassigned. Because it's all by gear and not by FMP at the point that we're issuing, assigning it to an FMP is something that could be done sort of post hoc as we analyze the data and figure out what was caught, where they did fish. That information, I think, if I'm understanding you correctly.
I'm not probably saying what I'm trying to say correctly, but I'm just concerned about the fairness issue among users of perhaps the same type of gear that fish in different areas where the bycatch structure, as you pointed out, when he has a variety of different species, may be completely different. And is that something that the council has to figure out, or is that something that you guys are going to try to work with? I guess the bottom line is I'm looking for something that's fair, and I'm not sure that I have it here.
Well, I think if I understand you correctly, you're talking about sort of somebody's fishing with a large mesh gill net out of Massachusetts and out of Maine. They're both New England large mesh, but they might be fishing in different areas. And while that's not specifically part of the SBRM, we're sort of lumping them together as one thing. I believe that sort of trying to get a representative sample across the areas is some of the work that's done by the observer program, that they, as they actually assign observers and figure out, you know, there's a target at the beginning of the year that SBRM is setting up, but during the year, as they sort of go through and actually assign observers, I think there's a lot more work that goes into trying to make sure they get a representative sample and distributing that across. I don't know if anybody else wanted to speak to that, but I think that's sort of separated, and we didn't want to be as, you know, dictate that within the amendment that, you know, may have to change on the fly as they do assign these things.
Follow up, Bill?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to answer the right question either, but I think what you're asking is when the analyses are done and we produce a report that shows bycatch rates aggregated over target fishery, gear type, habitat, whatever, that those should not be done in a way that can be misinterpreted to assign responsibility to any particular sector with a small s. And I think when we work with this kind of data, we always look at, you know, different ways of aggregating and presenting. They're somewhat limited by the data themselves and how much sampling we have in any one stratum or anyone in any one place that we want to aggregate. But I think our goal here and the overall goal of SBRM is to properly account for bycatch, not to ascribe blame, and to use it as a way to help us, as a guide to help us collectively in steps that we can take to reduce bycatch where we see bycatch levels that are higher than we might like to see.
Okay, Ellen, your last question.
I can answer his David's question, and it doesn't have to do with SBRM. The bycatch is determined per sector by gear type. So they take each sector, each gear type within that sector has their own bycatch. So
thank you. The committee, there was an SBRM committee. They did meet in the beginning of January, and many of these questions were asked at that time as well. So there is a committee motion, and I'm going to turn over to John Quinn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And this motion was adopted at the ad hoc committee meeting we had on January the 23rd, I believe. So it's not as long as my Habitat Committee motion, but it's a little bit of reading involved here. So the committee recommends the council adopt the Northeast Regional SBRM Omnibus Amendment as presented, with preferred alternatives as from the original SBRM amendment, with the following exceptions. Element 2, analytical techniques and allocation of observers. Alternative 2.3, option C, importance filters without gray cell filter. Element 5, framework adjustment provisions. Alternative 5.4, frameworks and annual adjustments excluding fishing modes. Element 6, prioritization process. Funding trigger, alternative 6.1.2, identify specific SBRM funding sources. Reallocation, alternative 6.2.3, penultimate cell approach. Less than minimum pilot coverage, MPC, alternative 6.3.3, remove fleets with high MPC today's absent ratio.
Need smaller font. Committee motion doesn't need a second. Go out to the audience for comments. Gib.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. We are the, I guess, the reason behind all of this. And the reason that we've been fighting for this for so many years is, and I'm glad to see that the discussion around the table today is getting back to getting information into your hands, having reliable, high-quality bycatch information, estimates about what's happening in each of your fisheries is critical information to do your jobs, to identify bycatch problems and craft management responses for those bycatch problems as they pop up. Prior to the SBRM, we had snapshots and a loose assemblage of information about bycatch, but nothing unified. And now because of the SBRM, well, at least until the last couple of years, we've had an annual report that gives us an idea of what's happening in these fisheries. Unfortunately, the way that the SBRM is crafted right now and what this motion is intending to do and what some people around the table have, I believe, accurately described is that it's not going to do the job to give you the information you need to do your jobs. We're not going to have bycatch estimates by stock, not going to have it by FMP, going to have it by this loose term of gear mode, which then we'll have to dig in further to figure out what this means and start talking then after that's already been done, what needs to be done on the management side of things. We saw this with small mesh bottom trawls, and I believe this windowpane flounder popped up in the other subcomponent of the groundfish fishery, and it took almost a year to parse that information out and turn that into something that could address that bycatch problem. The SBRM should be providing these estimates to you every year with uncertainty estimates by FMP wherever it's possible, by stock, definitely by stock, to meet the stock assessment goals of the SBRM to support stock assessments. We need to know whether it's a Georges Bank cod or a Gulf of Maine cod that's being discarded as bycatch. The SBRM that you have in front of you right now doesn't do the job and isn't going to give you the tools that you need. It's disappointing that the work hasn't been done to address these needs. The FMAT process, even though we had significant delays, I think this was first in front of you in June, and we're 10 months down the line. There wasn't an opportunity to do follow-on work to address any of these problems. It was great that the ad hoc committee met in January. There was some good conversation about necessary changes that needed to be made to this to improve the SBRM reporting that was going on. But largely what you have right in front of you is a repeat of what was approved previously with some minor changes to address the court order or the vacation of the previous SBRM. And we have much different fisheries around here right now compared to what was done in the prior SBRM. So that being said, we're disappointed in what you have in front of you right now. What can be done today? The ad hoc committee, the motion here is the motion that went through the ad hoc committee. There are recommendations below that on your committee report. We support those recommendations. We think that those should be added to this motion as firm, concrete actions that go into the SBRM amendment, so that it's codified and is a required element of your annual bycatch reports. You should be getting information by stock. You should be getting it to the extent possible by FMP. You should have uncertainty estimates. Those things that are listed at the bottom of, I guess it's page 3 of your document 1, those things should be included in this as required elements of the SBRM. And that's a good first step to improve the process, get you the information that you need to do your jobs. The bigger picture stuff about bias and whether this supports ACL, AM management of these fisheries, those are going to have to be taken care of further down the line. Those are larger scale weaknesses in this document. But our suggestion right now at this point, moving forward, to make the best of the document you have in front of you is to amend this motion that's in front of you, include those things that were discussed at the ad hoc committee, make sure that that information is being included, and then we can move on from there. So I hope that you'll take that advice and do with it what you will. Thanks very much.
Other comments from the audience? Wendy.
Yeah, just to clarify what these data are used for, it's comprehensive, it's multi-species, it's multi-stock. So stock assessment scientists are using the results of this SBRM design to generate estimates of discards for individual stocks, and the uncertainty estimates are also, although may or may not be included in the individual stock assessment final documents, could be certainly produced. So I just want to make sure that people know that the SBRM design that has been in place for the past several years has certainly provided data that's used by stock assessment scientists by stocks. And again, it's comprehensive over all management plans. It's not tailored specifically to New England sectors or specific gear type. It has to satisfy a whole bunch of multi-species users. Thanks.
Ron.
Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. I don't understand the motion. It's way too complex for me. So back in the olden days, if we decided the scallop fishery pays for its own observers, and if we have a recommendation that we want to have more observer coverage in certain strata in southern New England, that's totally gone now from the table because of all the decisions that have been made by the courts and this process. In other words, there's no flexibility to move observer coverage around, recommendations from APs or PDTs.
Doug?
Certainly in the short term, yes. The binding of the funding lines to SBRM would remove the flexibility to then allocate additional days elsewhere. It's possible in the future additional funding, you know, from Congress or through other sources could have been allocated for specific purposes outside of SBRM. But under the four funding lines that we've used and that are primarily used for observers, this would remove that discretion to do that.
Right, but in the case of the scallop fishery, we're paying for it. And as far as I see, we're paying for more days than actually the SBRM would require. But it's driven by filters, for example, the turtle filter. When we don't even catch turtles anymore. So it's having 598 days to observe turtles that don't come on deck. We might want to move some of those days to get a much more precise estimate of windowpane flounder bycatch. So what's the process to do that? I mean, do we have to, who runs the filter, and when does that get run? And how do we shift days? I mean, to me, all flexibility is gone now, and it's not funding-driven in the case of the scallop industry. I mean, we could decide to vote more days if we wanted to.
Doug?
As far as I know, I'm unfortunately not as familiar with the scallop. I think as far as SBRM is concerned, the SBRM would set the level, and then industry funded would cover that. I don't know how days in excess of SBRM that are industry funded are assigned, and it's possible there would be flexibility in those excess days if there were some in a given year. But as far as right now, as this process was moved forward, SBRM would be the basis of bycatch monitoring. That would be the core. And without additional funding sources or lines, yeah, there wouldn't be any agency flexibility in that.
Thank you. I think the point is this is the beginning. This isn't the end here, and the council needs to devote a lot more effort into thinking how we move from this point forward, because I see a lot of problems.
Okay. Back to the council. Bill.
Thank you. Wendy should correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is really in response to Ron's comments about the industry-funded scholar program. Of course, the industry is funding the ATSI costs, but the agency is funding the non-ATSI costs. And that money is coming from the same pot it's coming from one of the SBRM pots, should I say. So we still have to use the money that's in the different SBRM lines first to meet SBRM needs, and that means that for the scholar, the same rules will apply for the scholar fishery as they would to any other fishery.
Comments from the council. Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree, I think, with a lot of folks that this is probably not exactly what we wanted, and I think it's going to have pretty far-reaching implications in terms of our ability to prioritize and our flexibility. With that said, I supported this at the ad hoc committee as the best option on the table, and I'll continue to support it. I do think that the committee discussion points at the bottom of the committee report are important, and if they need to be included here in the motion to move those concepts forward, then I'm happy to bring that motion to amend. These are the estimates, basically the uncertainty associated with point estimates of discards, that wherever possible we'd be estimating discards by FMP and by stock, and then, you know, that the agency would annually communicate the budget request. So if I'm not sure that we need a motion here or to amend this, but I'd support it if we did. I want those things to move forward.
Tom.
So the thing to remember here is this is a joint action with the Mid-Atlantic Council and the New England Council. And the Mid-Atlantic Council already approved, I don't know if it's exactly this motion, but it's the same measure. It's exactly this motion. So my recommendation to the council might want to be to keep the two issues separate so that you can pass a motion that moves this document forward and we don't have to go back and get the mid to make the same motion. And then have a second motion that addresses those things if you want. While I got the mic, I'd like to point out just a couple things that, you know, the FMAT doesn't entirely agree with, with some of the comments made by the public. You know, if you look at the purpose and need about the SBRM amendment, it's talking about the process of setting up how do we monitor for discards. And once the information is collected, it's used a lot of different ways. I would point out that the very issue that was used as an example of information you're not going to get was the result of the information that was collected through the SBRM. You know, we were able to use the SBRM information to identify who was catching and where the windowpane flounder discards were being caught and generated that, and that led to an action. Now, the other thing is, with respect to uncertainty, I don't believe the latest annual report is quite ready for release, but you know, one of the points that the committee said is the annual report should include something that gives us a better idea of the uncertainty rather than just a lot of the information now, I think, lists the CV for the different species, but, you know, that's kind of a magic number to many of us. And so the annual report, I believe, that is coming out is actually going to turn that number into an estimate of pounds so that, you know, the average reader will be able to look at it and say, oh, okay, so the number is 100 pounds plus or minus another 30, as an example. So that will be in the next report that's released, which I think is still under review or has just been released or something. So some of this stuff is already in process, but I would keep the two motions separate. That's my recommendation.
John.
I was going to mention what Tom said, which is this is a joint action, and support the wording being the same as the MID. I want to express appreciation to Doug for his presentation. and also to Wendy for what preceded it. And notwithstanding the comments I made earlier about the constraints that this places on the agency, primarily Bill Shop, this is a necessary step forward, and we are very supportive of it. I'm going to abstain because this is a final action, but we are, you know, firmly supportive of this step, and just want to mention that.
David.
I can appreciate the need to adopt this motion. The Mid-Atlantic did, and I assume we all will adopt it here today. However, before we do that, I would appreciate some additional insights into the degree to which we will be constrained by the SBRM relative to consideration of some of the recommendations that have been made about better sampling the groundfish fleet. And that's the report in our binder by GMRI, by Jenny Sung, and she has a number of recommendations relative to how we can improve observer coverage to get better estimates of discards, et cetera, et cetera. What she offers up as specific recommendations in the GMRI report, can they be considered by the center as we move forward to improve our sampling of the groundfish fleet of the different sectors? Or is all of that, all of those recommendations, out of bounds because of what we're adopting here through the SBRM? I'm still confused as to how the SBRM impacts our sampling of the groundfish fleet.
Bill, can you... Wendy.
The SBRM provides, and I gave you a quick slide, maybe a little too quick, some baseline underpinning data that is very consistent with the way that the sectors, the sector stratification, not to get too statistical, operates. So we start off with the coverage that we obtain for New England groundfish sectors under SBRM. So those are the gear types and the areas. And so we assign those, we assign those sea days. And then the gap between the target coverage under SBRM and the specified target coverage, excuse me, the gap between the coverage we achieve under SBRM and the target coverage rate that, that NIMS puts out each year, that gap is made up by at-sea monitor coverage. So that stratification within the way the data are divided in the at-sea monitor coverage is the same as the SBRM coverage, so that enables you to get your coverage, basically your SBRM days are free. If you change the stratification or the way that you divide out your at-sea monitoring days, then it becomes much more difficult to use that SBRM data in a consistent way. And the one other option, in addition, I think the PDT was interested in more feedback on the Sun report. This was the result of the MFI workshop, and so I was under the impression that that feedback would go through the PDT in terms of the utility or other options for that. Thanks.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, so Wendy, I assume you've had a chance to look at that GMRI report. In light of what you just said, I think you are indicating that those particular recommendations are cannot be entertained.
But they, I understand that the PDT had been looking for more information in terms of the performance of the of that particular way of dividing up the data. And was it better in terms of performance than the current method?
To that point, Tom, and then Mike.
So for those who may not have read the GMRI report, it basically suggests a different way of assigning the available level of observer coverage. I'm not sure that entirely conflicts with the SBRM. That would be something to explore because the SBRM talks about how we estimate discounts. It talks about how we distribute the observer coverage to the different fishing modes. I'm not sure it goes into the detail about how any specific trip is selected for being observed. And Doug's shaking his head no, I don't think it does that. And so the GMRI report basically suggests an alternative way on how you select trips and how you distribute the assigned observer coverage within those trips. But I would caution you that, the report or a version of that report first came out a couple of years ago. It's been under development. It's been being looked at. And there's still a lot of back and forth going on about that. And then I don't know where it'll go from there. Jamie has been talking about it more recently. She may have more details, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Mike.
Yes, I also wanted to thank the agency people for putting this together. I think it's well done. This has been informative. It obviously isn't perfect, but I can clearly support the motion. It seems like the most reasonable and workable way forward. A lot of us are lamenting the loss of flexibility that this implies, and that certainly will cause some problems. But I'd also note that in some ways, flexibility can in fact undermine your ability to maintain long-term consistent data sets. And so the constraints that this will put on us, while they may have some create some problems on a year-to-year, day-to-day basis in terms of operational things, they will probably result in the long term a better, more consistent picture of bycatch issues within our fisheries. And so those are real trade-offs that we face. And I'm not convinced that I tend to believe that the benefit of maintaining that consistency of design and implementation over the long term may outweigh some of those necessary difficulties we will face in the short term. I do think, though, that an implication of this is that as the expectations continue to grow for more and more presence of at-sea monitoring, we do need to develop some sort of alternative model in addition to the SBRM that becomes much more amenable, more affordable, more operational, more flexible to cover the wide variety of needs that this is not designed to cover. I also do think that that opens up a discussion that, I don't think we've had it enough, but the issue of using the same program for collecting scientific data, and again, the issue of compliance monitoring and the implications with respect to potential biasing that results from essentially the observer effect on fishing behavior. And I don't think we should be just ignoring that discussion. But my bottom line is, where we are today with the options in front of us, I can clearly support this one. Thank you.
Doug.
I have a question from a herring standpoint. If this version of the SBRM is approved and we go through with it, given the current funding levels that we have, how is that going to affect the ability to provide 100% coverage in herring and groundfish closed areas for the herring vessels?
Most likely, yes. I think currently this year they have reserved days out of some funding lines to assign for that. There would not be the option at the center to reserve those days in the future or next year. So unless funding came through a different source, first and foremost, herring would get SBRM coverage, and I don't think there would be additional days to necessarily hold in reserve for closed areas. I don't know if anyone else wanted to comment on that.
John.
Yes, I want to make some comments that kind of go beyond this vote. It's always dangerous to go beyond this vote, but I think this vote needs to happen. We need to pass SBRM as it's up here. But I do, although it's risky, want to look past this vote and pick up a little bit on Doug's comment, on Mike's comment, and on Laura's comment from a long time ago, like before lunch, and that is that And Tom Dempsey's and Matt's comments about the where we're headed. We're expecting more. And a number of these presentations have talked about constraints or the fact that we're expecting more, but we're laying out a lot of information that talk about constraints. And so this is irresistible force meeting immovable object. And what are we going to do about that? Because it looks like the immovable object is both the lack of flexibility of SBRM, the fact that budgets are level funded at best for observer coverage. There's really a fixed amount of human resources we can develop, we can devote to this, and their physical constraints. And so maybe they go up a little bit, but they don't go up a huge amount. And there's legal or bureaucratic constraints that we have to face that maybe you don't have to face in the private sector when you move from one place to another. So these are our reality, and we're just trying to share it with you so you understand that. And the irresistible force is that we have to do SBRM, and there is a desire by this council to increase substantially. You say to 100%. That might be debatable, but you want substantially to increase coverage on herring. The mid wants substantially to increase coverage on mackerel. You want to say, we'll get the industry to pay for it. I assume you mean a real cost, but even a real cost is the at-sea portion, and what we've learned from Wendy is the at-sea portion, what did she say, roughly $500 or so, would force the onshore portion of a similar amount, if my quick math was right, of about $500 a day. And as I said, the Science Center doesn't print money, so they'd have to go find that somewhere, let alone the floor plans and all that kind of stuff. So, again, maybe they can find solutions, but there are constraints. We want, you know, the continued ability for the government to pick up the costs of the groundfish industry observers. You saw that disappeared somewhere in Doug's slides. That seemed to disappear. It was gone in 2014. It's gone in the president's budget. I don't think the groundfish industry is miraculously in better shape in 2015 than they are now. Where's that going to come from? So, again, we want all these things to happen that puts pressure on observer needs. We want this to happen, but there are these constraints. What I'm painting is not a pretty picture. And what's the answer? So I think in the discussion there are some elements of answers. Mike talked about, well, we need to set up perhaps two systems. So the omnibus amendment, which is going to get some discussion after this, is one piece of the puzzle. That needs to get passed to set up a mechanism of doing that. Laura talked about, you know, perhaps there are ways that we in government can learn more efficient ways of doing things. We ought to be open to that. We ought to have our minds being willing to stretch. We in government should leave this meeting saying, can we learn from that? If you can close a plant and open a plant in one day, are there things we can learn about, you know, those boundaries? I bet there are, you know. Maybe we should take home from that. Can we learn that some boundaries aren't real boundaries? So you know, I promise to look and find ways, I hope Bill does too, that that we should reach out and see if we can do that. I know that just doing observing the way we've always done it is probably not going to be the answer. Dan Morris, my deputy extraordinaire, Russ Brown, Dan's counterpart at the Science Center, heading up a group trying to work through fishery-dependent data collection, electronic monitoring, electronic reporting. What's the next generation of technology that's going to provide the answer? And Bill and I are saying, what kind of resources can we do so that this next generation technology, whether it's cameras on boats, whatever it is, can provide some of the answer. I worry that people think that's a silver bullet, that'll be the answer. I don't think it is a silver bullet, but I think, again, it can be part of the answer. I worry that no matter how fast we do it, it's not going to get here in time, that there's still going to be a huge gap. But that's part of the answer. And we may hear some more about that this afternoon as well. There are parts of this all in today's different reports around this, but there's still a big problem between the demands we're placing on this system and the various constraints. And together we're going to have to find ways to bridge this. And they don't all exist right now, but we're all going to have to – it's a gap. It's a big gap. But in the discussion, we've heard from Laura, from Mike, from Tom, we've heard different pieces of it today. So maybe together, all those pieces will add up.
Jeff, you had your hand up? Okay. Any final comments to the motion on the board? Seeing none, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those abstaining? And the motion carries 16-01. And to you, abstaining to Tom? Oh. Next issue, okay.
I do think it makes sense, and I appreciate Tom's counsel and followed it, obviously, but I do think it makes sense to address formally the discussion that we had at the ad hoc committee and the issues that we raised by consensus. So with that, I would move to request the agency, one, provide measures of uncertainty around discard estimates in the SBRM annual report, two, make necessary changes to provide discard estimates by stock and by FMP wherever possible and include progress updates on those efforts, changes in each annual report, and three, communicate to the council annually on the agency budget request for SBRM monitoring.
Second by Dave Preble. If you can provide your rationale, I'll go out the audience.
Yeah, I think the notes on the committee meeting outline some of the discussion that we had, but really I think these were improvements that people wanted to see over time. I think discard estimates are all well and good, but we obviously know that sample size impacts the error bars around those estimates, and that error is important, and we should consider that and hopefully have that in front of us. The second part, I know that we've talked about stock and FMP specific discard estimates. There are some issues that we need to address. We talked about that quite a bit at the ad hoc committee, but we need to be addressing them, not just talking about starting to actually address them. So hopefully this request will get us working towards that. And then three, the annual agency budget request for SBRM monitoring. This is, I think, a formality. We just wanted to make sure that we understood what the dollar request was. And, you know, if there's a shortfall, then so be it. We'll deal with it after.
Go out to the audience before I go back to Dave. Gib.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan, Oceana. We support this motion with the one suggestion that instead of making it a request to the agency, that this be put in as an amendment in the SBRM itself, and that it become the SBRM amendment has a description of the annual report and a discussion of the contents of the annual report, and rolling it into the annual report and making it a required element is going to give it teeth and make it non-discretionary, make sure that this information is done, that it's not just a request from the council. So our suggestion would be to amend the SBRM annual report section 6.1.3, I think, to include, if, yeah, chapter and verse. Yeah, I'm a nerd. That it be included in there, that it's specified in the contents of the annual report instead of making it a loose request to the agency. So thank you very much. We support this.
Anybody else in the audience? Dave.
David Gaethel, Ellen Diane. I guess parts of this motion I don't really care one way or the other on, but parts I think it should stay, request the agency. I don't think it should be in the SBRM amendment. It's more work, this whole workload thing. The one that really bugs me is this provide measures of uncertainty around discard estimations in the SBRM. And the reason for that is that I really think that's a topic for scientists at stock assessment workshops. This number that will be provided will have the potential for great misuse to be spun as people see fit. So I do disagree with the previous speaker. The second one on the discards by FMP, I don't see what difference it makes. Personally, if I'm a council member or a fisherman, I want to know by gear mode. I don't really care about, you know, whether it's in the dogfish plan or the herring plan or the groundfish plan. I want to know what gear mode discarded what. And you've already got that from the previous motion. So, again, it just looks like more work to me to provide stuff that I don't see is going to produce any benefit for anybody. Again, including this in the annual report just seems, again, a more work. I guess the only one I could support is the last one that to get a budget briefing just so you've got some idea of where you're likely to end up. So I guess overall I'm not really much in favor of this motion.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be very brief here. This addresses the questions that I had before, and so I do support it.
Any other comments from the council? Seeing none, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 14-1-2. Anything else for us, Doug? Thank you. Okay, we're head on to our 115 agenda item, public comment.